Good day, and welcome to episode 18 of the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. I'm James Gordon, and I'm part of the team behind a weekly community gathering focused on raising awareness and sharing ideas about important issues that concern residents of Guelph and beyond. This week we have a bit of a departure to share with you, not so political this time, though of course politics does rear its ugly head a few times. We're talking about cycling and active transportation in the winter, and especially during COVID. Some concrete tips for you all. Our guest is Giancarlo Martini from the University of Guelph's Bike Center, a great local resource which is actually closed currently because of COVID. Here's our moderator, Dustin Brown.
Okay, so welcome everyone. We've got an interesting out of left field session for you on active transportation. And we've got a special guest and good friend of mine today, Giancarlo Martini, who has worked at the CSA Bike Center on the university campus, among other things. I'm gonna let him introduce himself. Okay, so we've got a bit of a different session today. Later on, I'm going to ask people to provide input from personal experience about how they get through, how they're planning to get through the winter during a pandemic. So with the absence of having outings out to your favorite sports bar, cafe, retirement village, whatever it is, what are you going to do to keep yourself active and healthy throughout the winter? As we definitely know, one of those options, well, maybe not everybody knows this, and maybe that's the point of today's session, is one of the options to get active in the winter is actually to hop on your bike and go for a ride. So we've got Giancarlo Martini here, a former worker at the Bike Center, as well as a cycling advocate, among other things, who's going to tell us a little bit about why in the hell you would get on a bike in winter, and also how to do it safely. And I'm hoping we're going to find out a little bit about the difficulties in establishing good cycling infrastructure around town. And then I'm going to ask for input from all of y'all. So if you can, just while this is going on, think of something you'd like to share with all of us about how you're going to be active in winter, then that would be much appreciated. But for now, I'm going to go over to Giancarlo. Giancarlo, why don't you just tell us a bit about yourself, your relationship to cycling, and your relationship to Guelph as well.
Cool. Thank you for the introduction. I guess this is round two of intros for me. But for those of you that came in later, my name's Giancarlo Martini, like the cocktail. And I've been in Guelph on and off for the past 5 years. And I've cycled throughout the winters there because I am currently a student at the University of Guelph. I just moved out of my house that was on the Waterloo Avenue in Glasgow. I moved back home since everything was online. Home is Vaughan for me. So I'm actually not there to really experience Guelph cycling at the moment. But I'm still cycling at home. I got my bike with me. It's an everyday affair. I'll say right now, like, why you should cycle in the winter is the same reason you should ride in the summer, really. It's to be active, it's to get your endorphins pumping. And I think it's not as difficult as it may seem. I think the biggest barrier people cycling in the winter, obviously if you don't have a bike, it's gonna be troublesome. But if you don't have the right clothing, if you don't kind of wear the proper clothing, it could be very annoying. You could get really cold quick, or you could get really hot quick. So I think winter cycling comfortability comes down to what you wear, the condition of the roads, and the condition of your bike. So I guess I could expand on each of those things a little bit. So as far as clothing goes, you definitely want to layer what's on your chest. So keep something thin underneath and kind of like a thicker outer shell on top of that thin layer. You also want to definitely protect your face for the most part. So as like masks are a great thing to wear in the winter, like all the time. You probably don't want to take it off during the day. And a toque underneath your helmet, a thin toque. As soon as you cycle, here's the thing. It sounds like one layer on your chest and another layer on top is not too much, but you do generate quite a bit of heat as soon as you start cycling. So a couple kilometers into a ride, wherever you may be going, and you'll be really warm. Ski gloves are an amazing thing. Everyone's probably got their favorite pair of gloves, some leather gloves or something that could cut the wind. And mitts are great too. Like anything where you could keep all your fingers together and super, super warm is a must. That's my biggest downfall is my hands get cold. So I've invested in some thin cotton gloves that I put underneath my mittens. And that works amazingly well. I have a good pair of boots, so I don't really need to worry about what's going on down there as much. A good trick to cut the wind if you're wearing shoes or something is to use good old no-frills bags or some other single-use plastic bag over your foot and shove your foot back into your shoe. And that'll cut through all the wind. And wool seems to be the material of choice for all things active, and it's definitely true in the winter. It'll kind of wick some moisture from your body, and it'll also retain a lot of heat. Great for socks, great for tops, great for hats too. Say if you have any questions about like what to wear, what I wear specifically, save them for the end, I guess, but that's pretty much it. Like I could talk forever about a lot of things, so might as well move on to the next topic, which is your bike. We'll just quickly go over like what you want in a bicycle to tackle the winter weather. And the only thing really, like you could use any type of bicycle, an old 10-speed road bike, a mountain bike, really high-end mountain bike. In order to feel safe on the road, you're going to want something that you're comfortable riding. So skinny tires on a 10-speed road bike won't be your best friend. You'd want to actually invest in some wider tires. Tire pressure makes all the difference. So you could be riding a tire with 60 PSI of pressure, or you could be riding a tire with 40 PSI of pressure. When there's 60 PSI of pressure, the tire will be like this. It'll be pretty round on the surface of the road. But as soon as you get to 40 PSI, it'll fold a bit over and it'll mold over anything you go over, including ice. It'll give you a bit more surface area on the ground and it'll wrap around little pockets of stuff. But your winter cycling, your habits need to change too. Like the way you take corners, everything needs to change. You want to make sure you're extra visible too. You want to make sure you do have that rear light and that front light installed. I think it's mainly about making yourself seen and taking a pace that's comfortable to you. Sometimes bike lanes come into play where they're not kind of plowed early enough in the morning, and you're out there, you're the first one to keep your tracks on the snow. Which is honestly the greatest feeling. Once all that snow's gone and you just have a bit of an icy layer underneath, then that's when things get a bit hairy. So as long as you're also biking on fresh snow, you're pretty safe. If your tires kind of roll over freshly fallen snow, you're pretty safe. As soon as that snow goes away and there's that ice layer underneath, things get treacherous. So honestly, if you're winter cycling, right, which I hope you guys all do, look for the path of most resistance, in a sense. You'll probably have a good amount of safety there. And I know we're only talking about less than a meter of space, like what we're given in a bike lane. But it is there. it is there. Obviously, infrastructure and the route you take is the next big thing. You need to figure out the safest route to get to where you're going. Side streets get snow removal a bit later than a main street like Gordon would, you know? So you got to think about what I said about putting your fresh tracks down. Sometimes those side streets aren't the worst thing ever. Even with a good amount of snow on it, a couple inches of snow, your wheels are like pizza cutters, you know, they'll get right through it. I wish we had protected lanes everywhere that were plowed before 8 a.m. in the morning. I think that's the only way to actually make it so that, like, it'd make it like absolutely safe to get around any time of year, and especially in the winter, so like between December and April. I think that's the ultimate goal. But in the meantime, I think you got to show some people that you want a winter cycle by getting your bike ready, getting yourself ready and dressed, and actually just going out there a couple days this winter and trying it out. I see questions popping up. I guess I should address these, or someone is.
Yeah, I'll actually bring those up, Giancarlo. So
okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back just a little bit to another dimension. You kind of talked about the why and the how of winter cycling, but maybe let's talk about the who for a second. You know, from your experience at the bike center and various bike shops in Guelph, what kind of demographic are we looking at that is really doing most of the uptake in cycling overall, and also cycling in the winter?
Yeah, so I noticed, I'll say from my experience being a student, most of my friends cycle in the winter, and I noticed a lot of students cycling. But being in Guelph at the bike center, you got everyone from GCAT stopping by once in a while, you know, getting their bike lubed up, you know, taking some winter grime off their bike. So I'd say it's really everyone. There's people of all ages doing it, like people of all abilities doing it. Our good friend Reza's doing it all the time. He's an older gentleman too. And he's got like a simple bike, but he knows to dress well, and he's always pumped to go out for a ride. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. I think the main barrier is the resources to, like, when you don't have the resources to do it, it's kind of hard. When you don't have a place like the bike center where you could actually get the stuff you need to prepare for winter cycling, like maybe a wider mountain bike tire, but also just a place where you could really hose down your bike maybe once in the season and actually take that grime off of it, you know, to make it last the last 3 months. Or just to replace a part, it becomes a bit harder. So like if you did truly bike every day in the winter, you know, like I usually go through at least a chain and a set of brake pads. The bike center is a place where people who are also winter cycling would come in, they'd replace these things really quickly and efficiently and be back on the road. Now there's a bit of a barrier to doing that because it is closed. But that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get into the closing and difficulty of reopening the bike center in a bit. But I see we have a lot of technical questions. I just want to add to the who dimension that a lot of migrants tend to hop on bikes. Those who might not have enough money to purchase a car, or who aren't living close to a bus route that gets them close to campus or to their various workplaces, wherever that may be. So we do have a lot of migrants that would come into the bike center for a service once in a while as well. I think let's maybe get to those technical. Oh, actually, I'll tell a brief story about one of the successes of the bike center, which hands up. Or sorry, this is a different bike co-op I'm thinking of. Another place that that is handing out bikes for very low costs to people. And we heard a news article from some other city in Ontario. I can't remember what it was. They were saying that there was one migrant worker who cut down his commute from his home to his workplace by an hour and a half within the same city by being given a bike as opposed to taking public transit. And I think that's something that rings true in a lot of different cities, maybe including Guelph. I'm not going to take this opportunity to throw too much shade on our public transit system, but I know there are a lot of people who are underserviced and for whom a bike makes a huge difference in getting by in your day-to-day and getting around. I see Phil with his
hand up. That's a really good point. But the one thing that I do want to stress and encourage people to remember is you can put your bicycles on the bus. And where the 99 comes in really handy is you can get your bicycle to closer proximity fairly efficiently by doing just that. So there's real value using different modes of transportation to continue biking. And I would even say that for recreational biking, for anybody that wants to do any trails in the winter, that's even a better option than trying to bike some of the roads that might be a bit more precarious.
Mm-hmm. The bus has always been a great way to like dump your bike on it if you're unable to make it home or something, you know, if it is actually getting too cold out there, you actually forgot your gloves. I don't know why you do that, but maybe you forgot something else, something very important, and you just couldn't make the trip back. You know, you always have that way to get back home. But like Dustin said, it isn't super connected, but it is pretty good. So you should be able to get really close. It should get you where you want to go. The bus is definitely an amazing resource with bike racks.
Okay, awesome. Now we have a bunch of technical questions that people had in the chat. Tanya, you were first up. You saying you're worried about your fenders and whether you might be able to fit a large tire in there. Would you like to elaborate maybe?
Sure. I've got a bike. It doesn't have skinny wheels. It's not a mountain bike. But it also has fenders, right? So I'm thinking, okay, do I take the fenders or do I get someone to take the fenders off and then put, treaded winter wheels on it? Is that possible? Yeah, that's my question.
Are your tires pretty low profile right now?
What do you mean low profile?
As in, like, they don't have much tread on them. Like, they're more of a, maybe a summer-oriented tire.
Yeah, they're more of a summer-oriented bike, yeah.
You could totally, if the low pressure idea, if you didn't go to the low pressure of the range of your tire and you still felt, what I'm saying is, if you tried to lower the pressure on your tires and you still felt uncomfortable, what you could do is raise those fenders a bit. Any good bike shop in town, backpedaling, Speed River, Paramount, what they would do is recommend you a bit of a wider tire, something with a bit more tread. And it is likely that it'll fit. And if it doesn't, what they could do is just put a bit of spacers underneath your fender to widen it up, but on those stays of your fender that come down to your dropouts. So it's totally doable. I definitely leave those fenders on in the winter if you can. Like there's brands that do make skinny winter tires. So you might not need to do any of that if you're willing to invest in those tires. You could definitely go crazy with investing in winter tires. The best ones would cost you over $100 per tire, but they have studs in them. They're not making you fall. It's like, it's the Mac Daddy of winter tires, you know? But here's the thing. You don't really need them. You just need a thicker tire in terms of tread, and just to move those spacers out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, next up was Lisa, who asked, how do you keep your head dry?
Ooh. Okay, good question. Usually a thin piece of like Sometimes I have a buff, which is basically the thinnest piece of cotton ever. And I almost use that as a liner beneath my toque. Thing is, my head still gets a bit wet. For some reason you're biking, it takes a lot of brain work because your head's just producing all this heat, and before you know it, you're absolutely saturated. So I say, I honestly do not have the answer to that. Maybe like a headband, using just a headband and putting your helmet over that. Usually helmets, every helmet's different, but a good helmet will have good airflow, and it'll let you vent like pretty well. So I think if you want to keep your head dry, a headband's probably the best bet with a helmet on top of that.
Okay. Next up, we had a trio of questions from Phil. First of all, he was asking about knobby tires. So is you know, we see the knobby tires on cars and whatnot for winter time. Is that something that's replicated in bike tires? Are we looking for studs in a winter tire, or are there other parameters you should look for?
Going from like a very summer oriented tire, the next step would be, if you want to cycle in the winter, you should look into mountain bike tires. Luckily, there's a ton on the market. U of G Bike Center had a stack of them in the corner. All it is like someone's old retired mountain bike tire that was maybe a bit too low for the mud that could now be reused for, like, it was a bit too worn for the mud. Now it could be used for the winter. The mountain bike tires are amazing because they're wide and they allow you to run lower pressures, like as low as 30 PSI, which is quite low. And the lower pressures you run, the more your tire will drop over stuff, as I said. So that's the way you could totally get through winter comfortably on a tire like that. If you want to take corners in the winter like you would in the summer, you're going to want studded tires. So there's a couple brands out there that make studded tires. They're available at Speed River Bicycles and also Backpedaling. I haven't checked in with Paramount, but I'm sure they do too. But as I said, they are quite the investment. They're the best tires you could get for winter, but they range anywhere from $80 to $120, depending on the stud count you get on the tire. And the studs are pretty amazing. Like you buy them, you wear them in on just pure concrete for a ride, and then they'll last you throughout the entire winter, and they'll last you many seasons. So these are tires that you could keep, you could use for 4 months at a time or 5 months at a time, you know, in the winter, and keep them for like 5 or 6 years. The studs themselves are made out of tungsten carbide. They're replaceable. It's more of like, it's definitely an investment, but I'm saying like, it's definitely worthwhile in the long run if you decide that winter commuting is your thing. You know, I think so. Studded tires are the top question. I hope I answered Phil's question. So I'd go mountain bike tires, and then the step up from that would be studded tires.
Okay, very good. Next up in Phil's trio, safety vests. You want to talk about the importance of maybe being visibility on the road? How do you achieve that?
Definitely during, if it's snowing out and it's that really good fluffy stuff, it's storming out, you're definitely going to want to be seen more than any other time, you know? So it is super important to wear some sort of reflective gear, like anything between ankle straps, a safety vest, a safety triangle that you could suspend from the back of your seat, something to be seen. I think the best idea would be, I think the first thing you should do is get a rear light and something that doesn't like flash, because you're not an ambulance. You want something that's kind of going to have maybe a subtle dimness to it where then it brightens back up, because that really catches the eye. And then you're going to want a solid front light as well. I think lights are number one, but in conjunction with some high vis gear, you should be very visible. Even there's bike specific wind gear that's like very, very bright, like neon green. It's meant for visibility. There's helmet caps you could buy. There's even overshoes, which are like wind covers for your shoes that are high visibility. So there's a ton of options. And you don't need to dress up completely as a highlighter, but honestly, the more you do, the more you will be seen. Eyesight's a big thing. We hope people have good eyes and we hope they actually focus on you. That's my answer to Phil for high vis.
Okay. Last one from Phil's bank of cues was e-helmets. You recommend them? Is that a good way to keep your head dry?
E-helmets?
Or would perhaps the reduction in angular visibility change your mind about that? I've never really considered that. What do you think?
I don't even know what e-helmets are. Could you clarify?
Ski helmets.
They're I was like, an e-helmet. It's got a heating element inside that definitely warms up your head. So I'm not going to shy away from saying skiing and biking are different sports. They are, but they have similar impacts involved. So the safety rating of a ski helmet is good enough for the road. I'm not a professional. I have not run tests on these things, but I'm saying ski helmet overall, great. I think ski helmets are a bit more, I have no experience wearing one in the winter. So I couldn't tell you. Even going skiing, I don't wear a ski helmet. But I don't know about the airflow of them. But I'd say they're a bit more restrictive, right? Especially because they do have that headgear, that ear gear. I don't know, Phil, you have experience with it? That's what you usually use?
Well, actually, no, it just struck me when you were talking about wearing a toque and so on that I do wear a ski helmet because I'm safety conscious, unlike you. They're bloody expensive, but they are very well insulated. And I have not used any head coverings ever since I bought one. They do have vents on them, but it was more the configuration and the design that was a question for me. I wasn't certain whether they would be as effective on a bike because bike helmets are clearly different in their configuration. But I'll tell you, in my mind, it honestly should be law that if you are going skiing, you should be wearing one of those. But I just saw Albert de Jong say that they're probably too hot for biking. And that's really the question there.
Yeah, that's what I would think too, just based on what they look like.
Yeah. If you're going to ask me, I wouldn't like the risk of fogging up, especially if you have one of the masks that has a visor over the eyes. I wouldn't trust that. I'd always have that up at the very least. I don't know, but I'm not very risk averse on a bike, not even in winter. John Carlo knows that because kinds of bikes I was riding around a couple winters ago.
And the gear is super like classy. Like it's very like, I don't know. You don't need to really prep for it. Like you're an example of someone who doesn't really have to buy all the gear to get it done. You know, you're just able to do it. Your trips are short. Your commutes are short. You kind of get to dress what you want. You have your good gloves on and you just go. Works for you. So
for me. Okay. We're going to go to a question from Diane. Diane actually has volunteered and helped out at the bike center before. I think she misses it based on her double questions here. So first one anyway is more technical. What do you need to do in terms of daily care for your steed? You know, do you clean it after every ride? Do you wipe it down? I'll let you take that away.
So the biggest issue with cycling in the winter is the rust and corrosion that could happen. The way that happens is if snow starts melting on your bike. So if you're leading into the winter, you got those days where it's not quite, it's like the ground's just wet. So your bike's also just taking a beating, just getting completely wet. You want to just make sure that your chain is lubed, your drivetrain is lubed. It's cleaned and it's lubed. And you want a good quality wet lube that'll stay on your chain for like 2 weeks. Other than that, you shouldn't really have to worry about your frame. The paint's pretty good, especially if you have an aluminum bike. You really have no worry about it. It won't rust. If you have a steel bike that's kind of got chipped paint and rusting in places like mine, I make sure to just keep my eye on the joints and stuff. But I've been riding mine for years in the winter, so I think it's a bit more worse for wear than others. But basically, your drivetrain, I think, is the most important part. So you just want to keep that coated. So every 2 weeks, give it a wipe down and a lube, or whenever it starts to squeak on you, whenever you hear that bit of squeak coming from your chain, you want to lube it as soon as possible. Because as soon as you hear that squeak, that'll start, that's a sign of like, it's your chain's in an area where it'll now accelerate the wear. The more you pedal, the more it'll start to squeak, the more there's metal on metal, and the more it's no good. Water will actually prevent the water from penetrating into your frame. And a good lube won't wash away, even if it's hit excessively with water. So once every 2 weeks, a lubing, and if you can, a wipe down of your frame, maybe a few times throughout the winter. It's always good to get the salt off it. Think about it like if your frame's constantly like freezing up with snow, like you bring it in from a ride and it's covered in snow and then it thaws out, everything's gonna be, your frame's gonna be wet. It's gonna be an issue with rust. It's gonna cause rusting issues. It'll leave some chloride from the road salt on your bike, which is totally corrosive. The longer that stuff stays frozen on your bike, the better. So it's definitely, there's an extra care. Your bike is not technically waterproof. It's not a sea mammal. I don't know what to say about it. You need to take some extra care of it during the winter compared to the summer. That's for sure. It totally depends on what the days are like, how much you're riding it. There's a lot of factors that come into play, but I say, if you really love your bike, lube the chain before it squeaks, and give the frame a wipe down every month. Shouldn't take more than 15 minutes, really.
Cool. And I see another tip that's popping up in the chat, which is to not ride through puddles in wintertime or in melt, because you got highly concentrated salts in those puddles.
Yeah, exactly. Good tips.
Avoid salt. It's not cooking. Get the salt out of there.
Yeah. Not good for groundwater either.
That's a whole nother thing. Diane was also wondering, with the bike center closed right now, that was really a go-to source for a lot of supplies for a reasonable kind of at cost price. We had lights in there for $5 a pair, and that's not really something that is approachable in the market, I would argue. But that being said, where would you direct people who need to get some lights right now?
I'd say go to one of the local and super helpful shops that are in town. Clayton at Backpedaling would be able to help you out. Even Speed River, like Dustin said, they won't be as cheap as $5 for the pair. But I think locally, without going to the dreaded Amazon, you could just get those lights from a shop in town. Either Paramount, even Paramount Cycles should have lights, but I know for sure Speed River does, and Backpedaling. So Speed River is just down, I guess, Quebec. And then Backpedaling is on Crimea in the Junction.
Yeah, I'll correct you there. Speed River is on Windham downtown.
Onward.
A little bit close to where it turns to Aramasa by the Flower Barrel. But yeah, so backpedaling and Speed River. I know there are a couple people who offer their services for repairs and things like that, kind of out of their garage. I'm not sure if they would be selling lights, but that might be something that people would like to look into. Those people are more operating on Instagram than any other platform, but might be worth a look if you like. I heard from Phil that John Steggles has a question. John, do you want to jump in?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Sometime back in a previous meeting, and I was desperate to jump in at the time, there was a lot of righteous indignation shown about people riding on bike, on paths. And some of it shown from our two illustrious leaders here. I, for one, ride my bike avidly. It's put away now. I wouldn't dare drive it in the winter in slush and snow. Good God. Can imagine me on a bike in snow and ice? Good grief. the point being is that at that time, we were talking about you should only ride on the roads. I won't ride on the roads for the most part because they're too damn dangerous and you can't do it. I ride up and down Victoria, but I stay in the paths. There's no way that I'm going to be on the road with that traffic. Okay, I'd throw that open to be abused.
No, that's
chicken or the egg scenario.
Yeah,
came first, the bike lane or the cyclist?
I have something to say about that, Giancarlo, if it's okay. So I think there are a lot of politics around people riding on the roads versus riding on the sidewalks. I will say that people have done studies on what it's like to ride on the road as people of different identities in society. And it turns out that cars will drive closer to women, closer to minorities, and leave the most space for white men, actually. So I think particularly with migrants of color, you'll find a lot of them riding on the sidewalk, and it just feels safer because according to these studies, it is safer. I know that's a difficult pill to swallow for sidewalk riders, but the road is often not seen as a safe place to ride. Obviously, the ideal solution to that is to have separated infrastructure where, the road is for cars, bike lanes are for bikes, and sidewalks are for walkers. But in the absence of that infrastructure, I'm probably biased as a cyclist, but I tend to give leeway to people who are riding on the sidewalks, even when I'm walking, even when I'm annoyed by them. Giancarlo, what do you think?
I think that's exactly right. I don't see any other way to make it safe, to make it truly safe where people would want to cycle if they haven't before, in the absence of separated bike lanes, but barrier, like separated with a barrier, not just a line of paint. I saw some pilot projects. I saw some like counters go up like along Paisley, just south of Paisley and like subdivisions, and like that gets me excited. I'm like, what's to come here? What are all these things happening? Like people are taking count of bikes. Hopefully there's funding for bikes, and hopefully we could put that funding into yards of concrete and make barriers. And I don't like to say barriers are what we need, but in the case of bikes, I think that's true.
Okay, sorry, I saw Phil, you said something in the chat you wanted to jump in with.
Yeah, thanks. The villainous local politician that John refers to is me. I am quite clear in many respects that sidewalks are for walking, and that the roads need to be shared, with a particular caveat that I've heard John and certainly appreciate my wife's concern about roads as well. The politics of sidewalks and roads are that in Guelph especially,
we have not been that conducive and attentive to putting up purely dedicated multi-youth paths for bicycles and for any other mobility devices that there might be out there. My concern about sidewalks is really that I have heard from far too many people who become anti-bike as a consequence of people riding on the sidewalks because they say, I have my children and my grandchildren, or I'm very old and I am tired of people coming up behind me and just blowing by me, which relates to Susan Ratcliffe's comment about please use your bells. Now, the one slight modification that I have on that, John, is that I do encourage people to use some multi-use paths that are within our parks and our recreational areas. Because here's the bizarre thing about Guelph. Those bloody paths quite often get cleaned more effectively than do our sidewalks and more quickly. And they actually do provide some incredibly good biking opportunities and recreational activities in winter beyond things like taking a walk through the park or bird watching or whatever. You can quite safely get from point A to point B, although it is a little more circuitous if you do take those paths. So I know that when I'm saying don't ride on sidewalks, it feels counterintuitive to a lot of cyclists, but it certainly isn't counterintuitive to people that are walking. The other thing that I'll be really adamant about, and this is where I get really quite angry at cyclists, I am one, are cyclists who cycle the wrong way on the road. Cyclists also need to assume responsibility for what they want, which is safe, sound cycling routes and alternatives. I love what's being done in places like Copenhagen, New York City, Montreal, the Netherlands, wherever, where we clearly have honestly addressed issues of alternate modes of transportation. In Guelph, we want it both ways, and we're not prepared to put the money into it. And it's just as simple as that. We're all in the community together. We're using different forms of technology. We need to appreciate that we need to respond to people. It's honestly, I'm going to very contentious comment here, and maybe the parallel is not appropriate. It's like people who say, well, I buy books, therefore I don't need a library. Well, because you've got a car or because you walk, doesn't mean that somebody shouldn't have the right to bike safely and have safe bike routes. And Guelph needs to step it up and do more. There's the political comment about bikes for you, Dustin. Finally got into the politics of it all.
No, it's good. You were also asking about kind of, you know, what are some socioeconomic perceptions around cyclists? And your specific question was, is biking elite? Giancarlo, you can jump in on this, but I'm just going to offer a quick comment, which is, you know, cycling in its origins, I guess, was seen as a liberatory tool, especially for middle-class women. And since then, that I think progresses throughout history to the point where now cycling is seen as something that is perhaps maybe reserved for the underclass and for exercise enthusiasts. There's a difference, I think, between depending on a bike to get to your work or school or whatever it is that you need to get to versus, hobby cycling. Hobby cycling tends to be very expensive and definitely there are some socioeconomic barriers that preclude students and many other people from joining that. But for the people who really rely on bikes to get around, a lot of them, we see them coming in and out of the bike center a lot of the time. And they're often very grateful that this is a place that they can get a bike for, $50 or less. They can get used or recycled parts for free. They can get new parts for at cost. It's a really special place. But just to kind of hammer home the perception that we have around cycling, where it's maybe not as popular here in Guelph, our volunteer base was often made up of people from Denmark, Germany, and the Netherlands. And these were people who immediately, as soon as they arrived in Guelph, they came out to find the bike center because they knew they would need a bike to get around because that's what they were accustomed to. And that's a whole different kettle of fish. You know, I would say that the solution to cycling versus cars is either cyclists take over like they have in Holland, you know, 70% of the roads are filled with bikes, or we have separated infrastructure. There's a lot there to bite on if you want, Giancarlo. What do you think is cycling what do you think it's seen as in our society?
I think it's as you said, I think it's mostly seen as a thing for sport, like something for recreation. You got the mountain bikers, you got the road cyclists, but it's like those don't necessarily make up the commuters, you know, the people that just want to go from A to B, leisurely, you know, not to get their heart rate pumping like crazy, you know, like people actually, this is such a useful and efficient tool to get around. And people realize that, like, I realize that a lot of us realize that, like, it's not necessarily a thing for sport. Like you said, like the bike center was a great way to just get bikes to people who wanted to get around. Like, I think just to chime in about what the bike center is at right now, trying to open up the bike center, I was told that, hey, we're focusing on things that will enhance the student life on campus more than anything else. And I just thought to myself, like, how could you not enhance someone's life with a bike by actually getting them out for a ride in the city or to the grocery store? You know, you're trying to do things on campus, like focus on things on campus that'll enhance a student life. But like at the end of the day, transportation is a huge part of everyone's life. But like, I think there is that stigma around cycling as it is like a sporty thing. The Dutch do it. It's not sporty. People in the Netherlands do it. Like it's totally proven to not be a sporty thing. And yeah, I don't know. I don't have much to say about that. I'm a mountain biker. I'm also a commuter. Like I definitely do both things and I've definitely worked at different shops that cater to those things. You know, you'll notice that some shops will focus solely on the sport thing and they'll try to sell you a bike they'll sell you parts in a bike that will make you better. At the end of the day, it's not about that. Another shop will sell a bike that will make you comfortable. Right. I had the pleasure of working for a shop like that this past summer. And I could tell you the client base, the people that came in, the people that were interested in cycling was way different than any other shop I worked at. And it was because of the way the bike shop functioned. It focused solely on commuters and not those like sport cyclists. Yeah.
Right. And I will say there are hundreds of people in Guelph who pass through the bike center every year, primarily as commuters, I would argue. Some sporty people out there, but a lot of student commuters. You want to talk about the bike center reopening now?
And, yeah, sure.
Okay, so yeah, just for context for everybody, the bike center has not been reopened during the pandemic, and Giancarlo has been one of the strongest advocates for trying to get that to happen. So Giancarlo, why don't you maybe talk about what that's been like and what the struggle is?
Yeah, so I approached, after getting a lot of input from people in Guelph, like community members and also students about, they were asking me for bicycle resources and I couldn't necessarily help them. The bike center was this place where these people used to go to. And now that it's closed due to the pandemic, there was a really rushed closing of it in the spring. But because it was closed so abruptly, people started just emailing other people for bike stuff and bike resources. So naturally I was like, why is this thing closed when bike shops are open? So I basically created an operations manual to prove that, like going through the University of Guelph's recommendations and guidelines for COVID operation and I brought it forward to the Central Student Association, which is the governing association of the Bike Center. And as I mentioned to you, they were like, we're too busy for this, because we're focused on enhancing student life on campus. And I'm like, you're too busy for this because you don't actually cycle and you don't actually get around by bike and you don't understand what it's like to get around by bike. So right now we're at the point where I handed them the operations manual. I told them to send it back for draft updates, like give me feedback on it so we could help kickstart this thing, you know. I know the resources are there to do it, but I think it's just been slow on their part to actually acknowledge like the help people need and that they need it now. You know, because we had like approximately 60 bicycles that were ready to be handed out to people for really low cost. And now those are just sitting. People are probably like just keeping their bikes in their corners of the rooms because it's got like, it's a bit squeaky, or like their brakes aren't working good. And all they need is like such a simple thing that the Bike Center could provide for next to nothing. It could provide the knowledge, it could provide the resources to fix these things. But unfortunately people have to just, I guess, choose another mode of transportation, walk, try to find another used bike, or just take the bus, you know? And that's not something, especially the bus, it's not something a lot of people want to do at this point in time. Yeah. That's all I got to say about that.
Okay, cool, Giancarlo. Well, hopefully that advocacy comes to fruition pretty soon. I'm going to thank you for all your technical expertise and candidness about cycling in Guelph. I want to turn things over now to, I know we have a few GCAT members in the audience, including Ted Bangay. Ted, you kindly offered to talk about kind of the walking dimension of active transportation. Would you like to jump in here?
I don't have that much to say about walking, believe it or not. I want to circle back to some of the stuff we talked about with cycling. First on the walking, winter walking for me, the biggest problem is actually in the late winter when we're into the thaw refreeze phase. We've got so many uneven sidewalks that when things thaw and refreeze, you end up with skating rinks for long stretches of the sidewalk, and they're quite treacherous. I'm a bit surprised we don't have a lot of slip and fall accidents in Guelph. So that's about all I wanted to say on the walking thing, that, you know, studs on your shoes, which you can get at outdoor stores like Mech, you know, they're helpful. I've used them and they seem to work pretty well. But on the cycling front, we were talking about a couple of things. We were talking about who rides and also some infrastructure. I'm shocked and appalled that neither James nor Phil mentioned that the three levels of government here in Guelph are contributing millions of dollars for three major infrastructure projects of physically separated bike lane construction on Gordon Street, Aramasa, and College. And I believe it's a total of something like 13 kilometers of separated infrastructure. I can't remember the date of completion of these things, but the fact is the future is bright there. We're gonna have a first class infrastructure on those three routes. On who rides, there's a number of studies that have been replicated all over the place that divide the population into three categories when it comes to cycling. There's the no way, no how group. There's the warrior group, who will ride anywhere at any time fearlessly. And then there's the largest group, which is roughly 60%. And these are people that would consider riding if they could be made to feel safe in infrastructure and in good infrastructure. And I think that's a very large group of an untapped population that we need to try to convince to try cycling. I came to Guelph a little over 3 years ago. I'm now 67 years old. I had not ridden a bike for about 35 years. And when I got to Guelph, I bought a couple of bikes. One I ride out for exercise and sport out in the country. And the other one I call my city bike that I toot around in town. I've ridden on the trails. I've ridden on the multi-use paths, and I've ridden on the painted infrastructure. To a certain degree, it's a matter of just trying it, getting a little bit of courage. I'm not in the warrior group. I'm certainly just a normal, ordinary guy that's as afraid of fast-moving cars as anybody else. But it's if you got that bike in your garage that you haven't ridden, just try it. And I think you should feel comfortable to ride on painted infrastructure. I know there are well-defined bike lanes painted on the roads in a number of areas of the city. The ones that I'm most familiar with are on Gordon Street and Willow. You have to have your wits about you. You've got to be aware of your surroundings, but I believe you can be pretty safe riding in those situations. And I think you should just try it.
Ran out of time again. That's all. Thanks as always to our guests and to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Alt, Dustin Brown, Tanya Gavert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions, or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. If you'd like to support the work that we do on this program, please visit patreon.com and look for Breezy Bullhorn. Thank you for any support you can lend, and as always, for listening.